Officials at the Vacaville Medical Facility allowed the press to speak to Black Panther Party founder Huey P. Newton Wednesday and Thursday of this week for the first time since his recent trial. KPFA was told Huey would be allowed to visit with the press from 1 to 3 p.m. on Thursday, and we arrived at 1 precisely. Entering the facility, which is a cop-out word like device as a nuclear device, entering the prison meant showing press identification, signing in, getting my wrist invisibly stamped, waiting for a series of steel gates to slide open with no two ever opening it at the same time, showing more identification, signing more slips of paper, going through more steel doors, until I was in the prisoner's area where I didn't know what to do with my eyes and they didn't know what to do with my beard. I was finally led to a small office to wait for Huey Newton, who I was told was with his psychologist, a Dr. Sorensen. A short while later, two other members of the press arrived, Joe Blum, who's the editor of The Movement, and Karen Wald of both The Movement and The Guardian. We waited, and waited until 2:30, meanwhile making several somewhat half-hearted attempts to point out the time to various officials, one of whom politely informed us that Mr. Sorensen's work was just as important as ours. Of course, for us, there was no possibility of returning tomorrow, but it is difficult to bring oneself to argue with the establishment when locked up in it. Before using a phone to contact the official who had arranged for us to see Huey, we were warned to dial quickly because any phone left off the hook for longer than 10 seconds would set off an alarm. At 2:30, Huey was brought to our tiny office and we began to talk. The first voice you hear is that of Huey P. Newton.
Yeah, I've been reading prompts. I have about three of them. Man of Words, though, just finished reading Beyond the Chains of Illusion by From, and I read Dersh's book, and
you got to read all three volumes of
Dersh's book? No, they didn't have all three volumes. They just had one book, but it was pretty good. It's called The Iron Prophet.
Well, there are three of them. The Prophet Owned, the Prophet Unowned.
And the Prophet Outcast. You mentioned it, but there's only the one, the Prophet Outcast.
Because it goes on for 1,000 pages more after that.
Yeah. It's a good one. Yeah, right. I'm surprised it's in this library, though, you know?
After this brief discussion with Joe Blum, Huey began poring over the various issues of both the under and above ground press brought in by Joe and Karen. One contained a picture of Huey taken Wednesday, his head practically shaved.
I'm glad they had that picture. It made it not such a shock.
What?
I said, I'm glad that they had that picture because then it wasn't such a shock. Because even Alex said to you that you had your hair cut all off short.
No, it was completely bald when he came last, I think. Yeah.
Is it mandatory to be that short?
No, you see, the guys gave me a real bad haircut when I came in. So I just cut it all off because it left patches, you know? Mm-hmm. You have to get it cut real short.
Yeah.
So I just cut it all off so it'll be even when it grows back. You know?
Did you cut it yourself?
No. We have a barber and an inmate.
Do they allow mustaches?
No, nothing.
Has the press been reasonably fair? In its reports, you said that they hacked up 2.5 hours of interview in 1 minute.
This was news on the TV 6 o'clock news. They never put very much, you know. So, but this was very bad because.
What did they play up?
They only played up one question. I was asked, "How did I feel about Officer Frey?" And I explained that whenever anyone is killed or hurt, that I feel sympathy and great compassion for them. And I went on to explain that I had no responsibility for it because I was innocent. And but still, that the Panthers are against killing and against all wars. As a matter of fact, I explained our motto: "We're advocates of the abolition of war." But they didn't explain this. They just said that I felt remorseful about it. This is all they played, you see. And then it could be interpreted, well, I'm copying out and stuff like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that, you know.
I guess that it, you know, goes without saying what your reaction to the trial was, but I'm really very curious about how specifically, you know, on what specific things did you react negatively to about the trial? I mean, obviously you felt that it was unjust and that everything went, you know, the wrong way. What points, you know, do you point to and say there's one of them?
Well, one, that blacks were systematically excluded, and we had much evidence on this, including the fact that the Public Defender's Department reported to the attorneys, to Gary, that it had been their experience whenever black was tried that there wouldn't be any more than one or two blacks on the jury. But in the other courtrooms where blacks were the defendants, there were four and five blacks on the jury. And the public defenders felt that the DA had ordered his department not to dismiss any blacks off the jury on a peremptory challenge so that they wouldn't be a part of my panel. This wasn't presented because the Public Defender's Department refused to testify to this, even though they had given the information to my attorney. So this is one instance of an injustice. The district attorney didn't want to be embarrassed by having to challenge even more blacks than 26, which he did challenge, and left one on the jury. So this is one instance. The other thing is how the Jensen attempted to erase the tape recording. This was the change of where Greer, the bus driver, who's a star witness for the prosecution, stated that he didn't see the defendant, or who was allegedly the defendant, clearly, because he only had his lights on. And at the trial, he said that he did see him clearly because he had his lights on. And we've got the tape 2 days after the jury was out. The tape was listened to the night before it was presented in court, and it was very clear on the tape, it was in the possession of the DA, that he said that he didn't see the person clearly. But the DA, when it was listened to in court, the DA apparently had erased that part that the judge couldn't even hear it. And it was lucky that we had transcribed the tape to another tape recorder and played it, else I would have been lost completely if we hadn't done that. So this was just treachery by the district attorney's department. So that's another instance.
I presume that all of these points will be used in attempts to get retrials. But it does look as if, according to Mr. Gary, that you will probably be here at least 18 months before anything comes of that.
Maybe even longer, actually.
Except that he should be out now on bail.
Yeah, right. But they won't give me bail. That's another discriminatory practice they're using. That manslaughter, that you're eligible for bail, but it's in the discretion of the court after conviction. And they wouldn't give it bail to me, in spite of the fact that the community that they wanted to protect sent in about 29,000 signatures asking for my release on bail. The judge showed that he was a good bureaucratic capitalist, and the reason I say that is because he wouldn't give this control to the people, that he was going to control it like he saw fit, and in conformity to the political machine's desire, and I wasn't released on bail as a result of this.
After the trial, you were taken immediately, or brought immediately to Vacaville. I couldn't believe when a newsman, since I was standing in the crowd outside the Alameda County Courthouse just after the trial was over, that a newsman was really accurate when he said he'd seen you go by in a station wagon. and that you raised your fist. I couldn't believe that the security of the whole setup, since it had been so tied up till then, would have allowed them to actually drive you directly by the group that was waiting outside. That's exactly what happened, though. Is that right?
About six cars.
And there was just one station wagon. You were
no.
You were
there were six cars.
I see. You just didn't see it all.
I had a six-car escort, two Vacaville, all the way down.
But you were taken out of the courtroom and put in the station wagon. It must have been like that, and brought directly.
That's right. I didn't even return to my cell. I went directly down. Matter of fact, they were so anxious to get me out, they packed about five of someone else's suits into the boxes. And I don't know if they got them back to the guy or not. I recognized the clothing. I told them who they belong to. To whom they belong.
Yeah.
What do you think of the discretion of the court in granting bail to the cop that San Francisco cop that murdered the black guy in San Francisco? Do you know that they gave him bail?
Yeah, they gave him bail, and then they reversed that. Because
no, they gave it to him again today. $25,000 bail.
It's because the cops resigned. The 200 cops. Resigned from the
no.
This was rumored.
They didn't do it.
They've been playing that rumor up that they're going to go to the highway patrol. 200 of them were acquitted.
Oh, is that right?
Well, they first let this guy out on an OR, and then they put him back in. And
yeah.
They didn't even ask for
bail.
$25,000
bail.
Yeah.
That's material for the community to explode. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What's it been like here? Has it been as bad as far as your being hassled is concerned as Alameda County was, or has there been any improvement? Are you being given a hard time?
Well, as far as the physical conditions, it's an improvement because I have the privilege to exercise, to go to the library. As far as attitude, it's still a very hostile attitude, and every day I have some altercation or the police are reprimanding me for some petty thing and actually making a big scene out of it, attempting to provoke me. But I've submitted to the intimidation thus far because I realize that they would like to provoke me into an incident, some kind. The prisons are very concerned about it. They've noticed that each day there's, excuse me, there's some other sort of minor.
What kind of things?
Well, it's really not anything very serious. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, no, this was Saturday, this particular thing. I'm supposed to leave my unit at 7:30. I have a car to go to X Court at 7:30, and you have a car to go different parts of the jail, different times. This cop told over the speaker everyone to lock up, and I didn't lock up because I had gone before at 7:30. I have an early appointment, and after everyone locked up, and he called me out and said, well, everyone locked up but the wing workers, they're guys who keep the wing straight, and he called me out, and the police called me out then and said, why didn't you come to my desk? I said, well, I didn't hear you call me. He says, well, I told everyone to lock up and you didn't lock up, and I called you by name. Well, it's difficult for me to understand the speakers. I don't know whether they call me or not. But I hear the noise, but it's scrambled, you know, over the speakers. So I said, but he says, well, whenever I call you, you're supposed to come, you know. And he's saying it in a very hostile, very belligerent way, pointing his finger and so forth. And so I said that whenever if I had heard him, I would have responded. And that, what did he want me to do? Did he want me to lock up? I showed him my work card. And he continued to make an issue out of it while the other inmates watch, you know, because the inmates are watching to see, well, what am I going to do about this, you say. So So then he said, well, I'm going to go in the room and you get on the speaker and call me. I'll see if I can hear. So he went into the room and so I went up to the speaker and pretended I pressed the button, but I didn't. And then he stayed in there for a while. He ran out. He's very upset, very attacked. And as he came out, I said, well, did you hear me? And he didn't say anything. You know, he said, you go in there and see if I can hear you. And all the time, the inmates were watching. You know, a big scene. So then I walk in, and he calls my name, and I step out, and I said, well, you did much better that time. And then he's, well, whenever I call you, I want you to come. So I said, I will respond if I hear you. And every day is something like this, you say, or something in the mess hall where I missed a seat, maybe. And this is a big earth-shaking issue, you say. You're supposed to fill each table up. If you overlook a table, you're subject to go to the hole. You know, as far as, you know, as far as the way they talk to you, I didn't go to the hole about it. But I was reprimanded.
Have you been put in a hole since
you? Well, when I first came here, I was put in the hole, but I was treated like an inmate on the main line. I could still come out of my cell, but I was in the side where the guys don't come out. I was the only one to come out. And sometimes they would forget to feed me, but I would miss breakfast, but they would feed me after when they finally discovered that I was supposed to come out, you see. Because they wouldn't, they'd bring the food up to the other guys who never leave. Something like at the county where they bring everything to you because the guys are in there all day. But I was always on the main line, but for a few days I was kept on the whole side. But now I'm out. I'm on the regular main line. I live in a unit where all the guys are out.
They're individual cells?
Individual cells.
Are you working?
Yeah, I have I'm supposed to be a janitor in X corridor, but so far that I've been able to evade the work. There's really nothing that you have to do. It's just more or less everyone's supposed to be assigned to a particular place. The first time, the reason I really got the job was so that I could be out of my cell more. I had been locked up for a year and I need to exercise, you know. And you get out of your cell more. You don't have to lock up when the other guys lock up. But I haven't have. So far, I can go inside of X Court, and there are many empty rooms, and I can go in and read. So I'll get my library books and go in there, and read practically all day when I'm out in the gym or outside on the yard. If it's kind of it's an advantage because. The library only stays open 2 hours, and there aren't too many places you can go. You can go to the gym, the yard, or the library, and the library is only open 2 hours, so if you go to the gym, so much noise you can't read, or out in the yard, you can't take any library books. So I can always go to the X corridor rooms, and the vacant rooms that are not being used for counseling. And it's a pretty good deal. But I work out every morning at the gym. It's pretty good.
When we arrived, you were in with a psychologist, Dr. Sorensen, I believe his name was. Now, how often does this happen?
It's first day.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Well, what's that like?
Well, it was just a conversation today that he tried to get off into the case, and I told him that we couldn't really intelligently discuss it because we would be very contrary. His first question was, well, how do you control your emotions under stress? And I said that I had no problem whatsoever. And he said, well, you are here. And I said, yes, I'm here, and we probably can't discuss this because I'll talk about one thing, you're talking about another, because you're assuming because I'm here that I'm guilty. And I'm not guilty, so we can't relate to each other in any sort of significant way. So he understood and dropped that. So then we just talked about social issues, and talked about the prison here. So it was a pretty good discussion.
What would you be seeing, once a week or something like that? Is that the way it works out? Is it mandatory, and then all the rest of it?
Um. I don't know. They have a, the only thing that's mandatory so far is the, maybe this is mandatory too, because if you don't answer your ducat, then, it's cause for disciplinary action against you. So I just received a slip to go to his office, and, but I go to an orientation twice a week, and there's a sociologist or maybe a psychologist in there, and it's a group discussion. And it's pretty interesting. The inmates say a lot of things that are interesting. A lot of their attitudes are pretty upset too.
Like about what?
Well, about the whole penal institution, about society in general. You get guys that are almost totally destroyed, you know. It's not really funny, like funny, but it's interesting in the way that the counselor tries to relate to him. And he's talking as insane as the guy is practically, because his whole therapy seems to be, if it's supposed to be therapy, I don't know what it's supposed to be, but he's telling the guy that he should get a job and, you know, work at something, and that, and he can't see the guy's real problem is that many of the inmates, that they have no real purpose, you know. That it's very, they talk about taking the time up when they get on parole, you know, you're just fooling around, you're going to these night spots, and if you had been on this job, then everything would have been all right. So this seems to be the counselor. This is what he says anyway, his attitude, to make yourself useful, you say. And he doesn't see this is all very empty to this inmate, because he's trying to fill the emptiness of his whole life. This one particular guy was saying how the adult authority and everyone was down on him, and guy gets on the street and he can't get a job, and the adult authority is working this all the time so to make sure he can't get this job, and he comes back here and then they won't let him out, and that he didn't do anything but go over to the topless clubs often, and the counselor says, all you want people to do is give you things, and if you don't, if they don't give it to you, then you'll take it. And he doesn't, the counselor didn't understand, this is the whole system that the guys are pretty well adjusted, really, the guys in here, because they understood that if no one would give it to them, they're going to take things, you know. But and if the whole human factor is never discussed, so far it hasn't been, on a matter of purpose and showing the decadence of the society. Of course, the counselor won't, if he mentions this, he will mention it in sort of a passing way, that there's certain things wrong with the social structure. But basically, he views the inmates as being not very well adjusted, when they are extremely well adjusted, those that I've seen in the group. So he seems to be missing the mark.
Are you straightening them out, son?
So far, today was the first day that I talked a little, because the counselor talked to me. Mostly I was listening to the inmates, you know, sort of see where they were standing, and most of them seem to be pretty unenlightened, or they're not very conscious as far as being cognizant of the political and social ills. They know that something is wrong, and they know that they're not fitting in the game, but they can't really see. It's still sort of unconscious, these things that are controlling them. They haven't unveiled it, you know. So some of them even protect, you know, maybe they're doing it to front for the counselor, but they'll try to protect the system. Say, well, you know you were doing wrong, you know. And this whole thing boils around to following the law, abiding by the law, doing wrong or doing right. related to the law, and they discuss nothing, about the purpose or purpose in life.
You said earlier, you alluded to the fact that you were being watched by the other inmates when you made certain moves. What has been the reaction of other inmates to you since you arrived in Vacaville? I mean, the reaction of the administration probably, is clear and understandable, but has there been a mixed reaction? Have you been well received? What does that mean?
I've been well received, very friendly. The inmates are friendly, even those I don't know. They walk up and they talk to me. I think they expected me to organize something as soon as I got here, but of course I haven't, because first I have to get adjusted to the situation, or at least understand the dynamics that are working here more than adjusted. And the second thing is to figure out some things that we can do. But I think they were expecting for me to respond to the bulls and a belligerent fashion, because they've directed their hostilities at me, and the inmates said, that they're just focused on you, because some of the police have asked the inmates, well, which one is Newton, most of them do that. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, even people come in here touring, they want to know where Newton is. So the inmates tell me, that they heard the last from the bulls where am I located.
How, you're scheduled to stay here 90 days, huh?
60 days.
60 days?
Right.
And have you any indication where you're going?
No, not really.
Why are you going?
I think they'll send me down to CM East, down to St. Louis Obispo.
Because it's the farthest away that they can send him?
Probably.
What is that, medium security?
I think so.
Why were you brought here for 60 days? Is that normal procedure?
Yeah, this is the medical facilities where they run a battery of tests on you so they can know what kind of person you are and so forth. But so far, I file them up on a test.
How'd you do that?
Well, it's mostly how I feel. Some of the tests I read, and I'll get hung up on, Like one thing they had on history, and they talked about the railroads, when the railroads came in, and I'll get hung up on it then just by accident, and I'll start concentrating on answering the questions correctly. But then they're about half or two-thirds of the test that it's not interesting to me, so I just go through it and just make black marks on the paper, the IBM sheets. So then half of the test, I was doing really well. Then the other half, I got zero. And some of the tests, I just went through it and got zero on the whole test, because I just, a three-hour test, I would do it in 3 minutes and walk out of the room. Number one, that I can't see where it would be any advantage to me to reveal myself to them in any kind of way. But the only times where I make a mistake with the test is interesting, I'll start asking. They call me in to take a retest on one of the exams.
What kind of tests are they?
They're just, most of them are aptitude tests, likes and dislikes, and those sort of tests. But then they had this one section of the test I liked on history. That was the part I got hung up on. And then you would do another part with general intelligence or aptitude again with the symbols, or how many boxes like this, or how many circles are in the box, or stuff like that. Yeah.
I going to have to change tapes here in a minute.
Yeah, oh, they retest me, and they said that this time the counselor, the inmates give the test. This time the counselor was going to observe me to do doing this test. So they gave me another test, and it was a half-hour test. And I finished that in a minute. And I started to walk out of the counselor and said, Newton, come back. So I went back, and he said, you could do a decent job on this test in a minute. First he said that you could finish this test in a minute. I said, well, I did, you see. So the test was finished. So, well, you can do a decent job on this test in 1 minute. I said that, am I required to do a decent job? And so he blew it. He said, no, you're not required to do a decent job. Neither are we. We're not required to do a decent job either. And I said, well, that's between you and your superior, whether you do a decent job or not. I'm not interested, you know. So that's pretty fun.
So now they've got you down for low incentive.
I don't know.
Who knows what that
card. I just talked to the psychologist. He had all my tests there. And he said that, he said my tests were puzzling. I didn't explain anything to him. I said, yeah. He said that, we don't know. We still don't know anything about you, or we don't know whether the test is valid or what it reflects, you know. So I said, well, do you have to know, you know, what the, he said, well, this is just our hang up, you know, these tests. I said, well, you know, I'm not hung up on tests. And so it was a pretty good thing.
I gotta change tape.
Okay. I'll jump back in with both feet. I guess this is probably the most serious question I had in mind to ask you when I came in today, and so I'll approach it that way. What do you think the effect is going to be on the Black Panther Party, you know, if you and Eldridge and Bobby all end up in jail? How do you think it might change the party? How do you think it might change the movement? Because they, you know, you are the three most outstanding spokesmen at the moment.
I think that David Hillary and Hilliard and George Murray and Kathleen will have a big job on their hands, but I think they'll be able to handle it. And Bill Brent is a very fine worker, and Wade, and some other Panthers who've been taking a leading role. I think that their work will just increase. But I'm sure they'll be able to handle the leadership of the Panther in the event that Eldridge, Bobby, and I are kept out of circulation for a while. One good thing, we have laid down a program, and it's not like taking leaders off of the leaders from the party, and therefore taking the program or taking the philosophy away. That it was our one of our major one of the major things we attempted to do was to create a program so that the community could follow, and so we hope that other people who have leadership abilities will be attracted to the program and to the community and go on with the liberation struggle.
So you then definitely feel that the philosophy behind the Black Panthers wouldn't change at all. It would simply be carried on.
Yes, in our paper, we have a very good deputy minister of information, Raymond Lewis, who's doing a fine job on the paper along with Eldridge Cleaver. So Eldridge has already groomed an editor, and I'm from the paper, I've read the papers. He's been doing a fine job. So I think things will go on. until I return.
Do you have any feeling that there may be people involved in the Panthers who, as the three of you are locked up, will get that much more frustrated? It seems to me to be an inevitable part of the whole process. Do you expect an increasing sense of militancy in the Panthers as time goes on, if this sort of thing continues to happen?
I think that as the people of the world become more oppressed and as the political repression escalates in this country, that the people are going to be led to rebellion and then revolution. So I think this is a necessary stage that the Liberation Front is going through, just as they're escalating the oppression in Vietnam. The more the higher the morale of the Vietnamese people are, and this is just one example of an oppressed people fighting for a long period of time under very adverse circumstances. I think we'll be no different here.
Is there anything in particular you'd like to talk about that I haven't touched on?
I'm always very lost when people ask me that question, because there's a lot of, a whole abundance of things that I could talk about.
Well, choose one of
them. Well, can I ask you about the prospect of at least you're being in prison, talking to inmates and doing a degree of organizing of people who are going to be coming out all the time. Some people perhaps have been in since before the Panthers formed, and with the censorship could never have seen the Panther papers anyway, and most of those things, potential Panthers in the prison system itself, so that your being locked up doesn't necessarily stop organizing.
I'll be honest with you, I haven't made an effort to organize so far, because as I said, I was becoming familiar with the procedure here and also with the inmates, but inmates have joined the Panther. So far about 10 inmates have approached me, and even though I haven't solicited any members, they've approached me and asked if they could join the Panther, and some of them are on their way to other institutions and they want materials, which I don't have, so I'm writing out some things for them. So that they could take with them and study and cooperate into their thinking.
I was thinking that would be a natural process in a movement spreading, especially among certain parts of the population most oppressed by ending up in these prisons. I'm sure it must be like Alameda County Jail in terms of number of black prisoners.
What is the percentage, or have you been able to figure out at all, the black to white ratio?
There's a larger percentage of blacks, maybe about 60-70% black, roughly. This is strictly from observation, maybe 20% off or so, I don't know. But there's a large amount of blacks here. But as I said, that I haven't solicited, but some inmates have joined up and asked, you know, for directions. It's kind of difficult because I am focused on at this point, and the inmates themselves have cautioned me to be very careful because of what we call the dead brothers, who were. Snitches or rats, and many of them who joined up have cautioned me to be very careful about what I say and what people I talk to. So I'm still sort of feeling myself around the place, but I plan to do some more. One of the things that I would really like to start is a campaign. About half the guys here are here on the straight violations, as it's called. They don't have a new charge against them. It's only they moved or something without notifying a parole officer, they come back here, maybe do a couple more years, and they get their time refixed. It's called the Adult Authority. When they left on parole, fixed their time in California's indeterminate sentence, say 5 to life, and when they're being paroled, the Adult Authority then will fix their time, say at 8 years, and then they'll be discharged after the 8 years, but they'll be out on parole, say 3 years. While they're out, they might move, and then they'll get violated. They'll come back here, then their time is refixed at the maximum, which is life, 5 to life, and they start the whole process over again. So this seems that there will be double jeopardy. The courts don't fix the time, and if the courts were to sentence you to a specific number of years, when they used to sentence you to a specific number of years, this was your time, and they could later on refix it and say that, well, we're going to give you more time after this. But the Adult Authority doesn't follow this, and so far the courts have somewhat held them, stood with the Adult Authority. I've been thinking of organizing a movement, which would be a Panther project, of putting some attorneys together on the outside, say about 10 are willing to contribute some time, and maybe they could get a post office box and for contributions to, you know, give them some financial aid, and research this and interview some of the inmates. Many of them have told me that they're interested in it, and challenge this particular law of refixing time. And matter of fact, the inmates are very enthusiastic about it. I've talked to a number of them because they've asked me about Eldridge's case. So they're very interested on that point. And this is the kind of project that I would like to start. As far as any resistance in the jail, which I am an activist, but I've never seen any point in really organizing a physical resistance in jail. I never have, because you always lose.
It is difficult to imagine winning. After the conversation between Huey Newton and Joe Blum and Karen Wald and myself was over, getting out of Vacaville required more identification, more signatures, more sliding steel gates, and this time a challenge from one guard who wanted to know why I had no pass. I said I was with the press, and he said, laughing in a friendly way, "All the more reason to check." I smiled. The last gate clanged behind me. They checked my wrist under ultraviolet light for the half moon stamped there, and I walked out into the parking lot, full of sunshine and the smell of onions rotting in the sun in nearby fields. This is Denny Smithson of KPFA's Public Affairs Department.